The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Yes, we are the Rush Hour on a Friday in between Australia Day and a weekend. What are we doing here? I heard Mick Molloy and MG this morning, and they were just like, no one is listening.
Yeah,
like, surely there's no one at work and
how
stuff.
How quiet is in the city?
There's no one in the city. There's no one here at Triple M, but we are here. How did you enjoy your Australia Day, Dill?
Mate, I loved it. It was really good. I got up, went for a walk for a couple of hours, as I do. Do my little bit of Destination New South Wales filming and that.
Do you live in Sydney now, dude?
Yeah.
I didn't realise.
No, it was great. And then just caught up with friends all day, different pubs. But just for me, it's a celebration of our wonderful country. I know it can be very divisive what we talk about, but I'm just proud to be an Australian and proud we live in such a lucky country.
It just felt a bit indifferent for me yesterday. I'm looking forward to celebrating tomorrow, just having a barbie and all that sort of stuff. It was a bit quiet yesterday, and then also just a Thursday. Sort of, I'd rather have a longer weekend and really rip in.
But we do have a big discussion to have as a country, and let's hope we have that. I think with the Prime Minister we have at the moment, we are going to have that conversation more likely. So that's an important one, because I love about Australia is the fact that we get everyone involved and all inclusive. At the moment, we're not there.
No.
So we know that. So let's put a line in the sand and make a date that everyone is happy with.
Yes.
Why would we want to celebrate something which is so decisive is my point of view. So I know you're going to talk about it in Jude Tackles, your particular thoughts on it. Jude, and we're going to do that in the second hour of the show. We're also going to speak to Pat Rafter. We've got Phoebe Litchfield, who is one of the guns of the Australian women's cricket team. We're going to talk to her as well, and of course a chance to take me on and win some prizes with all our phoners as well as the sports quiz. But what about this? And I came across this morning, picking up my wife, who's back from England. We're driving back at about 8 o'clock, and the school zone lights are flashing.
There's no school back on.
There's no school back on. Motorists have been warned to slow down in school zones from today, even though there are no pupils in class. It's also double demerit. So
money
this
grab,
to me slaps
grab
as a money grab.
New revenue-raising crap.
Bloody oath. New analysis shows fines for school days like today, where there are no pupils, are triple the normal rate. Last January, two pupil-free days clocked up more than 1,500 fines each, $753,000 just on those fines. So give yourself an uppercut. Anyone who's decided to put the school zones in place when there's no school on is absolutely kidding themselves, and it's un-Australian. So let's get that fixed up for next year. Time now for a little bit of footy news. We're going to talk NRL. Footy. Plenty to get through, Jude. Start the ball rolling, brother.
Yeah, Dell. David Fifita. According to James Hooper on Fox Sports, the Raiders have offered Fifita a 3-year deal worth around the $2.7 million mark. Now, Glenn Lazarus has also spoke out today and said Fifita should head to Canberra. What are your thoughts?
Look, I like David Fifita as a player. You know, he was born up there in Queensland.
He 20 years ago.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. And that's like, it's got to be the evolution of David Fifita. He's always got big money. Obviously, played for Queensland, you know, played representative football. But I think now it might be a good opportunity for him to move somewhere like Canberra, because Canberra, it's not like, you know, Gold Coast or Brisbane, but also having a coach like Ricky Stewart. Ricky Stewart's an old-school sort of coach with obviously some good people around him, but Ricky Stewart could get the best out of him, and it's not always about the big money. Like, he's taken the big money.
Mate, he's still going to get $900,000 a year.
I agree.
For what he's delivered the last 3 years, he's been absolutely a thief.
No,
he's absolutely stolen that money. Well, he's been hopeless for the Titans.
No,
he plays 15 minutes a game. He hangs out there. He bludges. If I was a Titans fan, I'd be blowing up with a bloke with that much physique and that much talent with the amount of effort he puts in.
But right now, you see Ricky Stewart as a coach. What Ricky Stewart would get, he'd get Bradley Clyde involved, and then he'd probably get some of their great forwards like Glenn Lazarus.
Wouldn't it be good to actually have Bradley Clyde back?
Mate, Bradley Clyde, I know he works in and around the game and does some things. He looks fit as, but that's what he needs. And I think for David Fifita, for him, he probably needs to move away from Queensland and go somewhere like Canberra, because Canberra have got a good side. They've got a pretty fair forward pack. Mm. They've got some real good leaders on the back of Josh Papali'i and, I think Tarpane.
Okay.
Right, Adele. Also reports that Herbie Farnworth, who's off contract at the end of the year, will snub more money from rivals like the Roosters, Raiders, Knights and Dolphins, who are all sniffing around to remain with the Broncos.
Well, I like this, and I think I tried to say this about 6 months ago. I think Brent Reed brought up that, Herbie Farnworth, he wanted this much money, and I said,
how much money did he want?
I think $700,000 or $800,000 a year.
Oh, he is kidding himself.
No, but then it's not just him, it's management too, but then you got Stags. Look, I'm happy for these young blokes to pay the big money, But I like this. From a Broncos point of view, as one of the legends of the club, that someone wants to take Leicester to stay at the Broncos, because I think he's a quality player. Even though I said before, if he wants that sort of money, he can go elsewhere.
Yeah, he can go to the Dolphins or something and come last every single week.
That Wayne would sign him, because Wayne hasn't signed who he's wanted to of late.
Mate, he hasn't signed Diddley.
Now, sad one locally, obviously, so-called for the Dragons. Super coach. Dragons young gun, Cody Ramsey-Dell, ruled out for the season with a serious illness. It's ulcerative colitis, which is, effectively
that?
A bowel disease that causes inflammation around your digestive tract. So,
how does a young bloke who's so fit get that?
It's pretty sad, though, isn't it?
It is sad. I know the community have really gotten around this young bloke. Anthony Griffin's done a really good job. I read something where his mum said he's checking with him every day, and that's what you want from a coach also. You know, Cody Ramsey, he was fullback wing for them. I watched this young kid come through, you know, with Tristan. The kid can play. I remember when on debut, he scored 2 tries and all his family and friends were around him. So hopefully he bounces back, this young kid. So young Sloane will probably get the first run of that fullback position, but this is what we need to do, get around these young people, because when it's going good, it's okay. But time like this, so... young Cody Ramsey, mate, I hope you're doing all right, mate. We're here for you.
Absolutely. We talked to Woodsy about it. Woodsy, obviously part of our show and part of Triple M, and we said anything he needs in terms of the mental fitness gotcha for life stuff, absolutely would never pay a dime. We'd love to help him if he needs it. But hopefully he's got a village around him that are looking after him, because for a bloke in the, you know, he's about to have a breakout season and all of a sudden it's taken away from him. It's really hard mentally for him.
Yeah, it is. And what you do is you just miss the interaction with your teammates, going to training, and that's one thing that I missed. It was just the familiarity of your players.
Bouncing off each other.
Yeah, we said that.
Yeah, absolutely. Boys, want to talk about an opportunity on 133353 to talk about your removalist horror stories, because a man in the UK has slammed a furniture company who left his new £2,000 safe, which is basically, let's call it around $4,000, jammed on the staircase. And they just abandoned it.
They tried
to get this big, long, and it was a big, long leather job. It would have been heavy, you know, thick, looked good value. Yeah. And they tried to get it up this staircase, which was going sort of up, left to right, and a bit of a shimmy. It just got stuck. They thought, rather than deal with it, they just left it.
No.
Jammed up against the wall and the staircase.
How do you go getting that down if two bikes can't,
well, that's
can't
a,
get it?
That's a good point. We're going to put the photograph up on our socials so you can actually see it. But he claims that despite delivery men assuring him that they make tight deliveries all the time, in inverted commas, they failed to get the new sofa bed up a narrow staircase before abandoning it. Photos of the attempted delivery show that the pair left huge holes in the staircase, on the wall, the plasterwork, and the damage of the woodwork before leaving the property. He says he recommended cutting off the banisters insisting that they could leave it there.
Cut off the banisters, please.
Referee. So it gives us a call on 133353. We want those horror removalist stories.
I had one which was my own problem, my own doing. Was
your own issue?
Yeah, well, I tried to do something on the cheap, which is, you know, sometimes that's what
like
we do
you.
As Australians. Is I borrowed a mate's ute. And I said, I can move to this other place. I was living in Annandale. It was a terrace house there. So I was upstairs and I was coming down with one of those older TVs. It wasn't a flat screen. It was just one of those big square bulky things.
Yeah, heavy.
Carrying it by myself and trying to carry it down these stairs. Now, I'm saying the stairwell wasn't, it was one of those older ones. It wasn't the actual legal square sizing step. Because I missed one of the steps at the top.
Oh, hard to recover.
Now, I've tumbled down the stairs with the thing. I've done a forward flip down the stairs and landed on my back, and I almost broke my back. And I was like, this is why you pay people
of
to come
course.
And remove.
You're an athlete.
Mate,
what are you
I
putting yourself
killed,
in that danger?
I could have killed myself. I saved the TV, which was a cheap TV anyway.
Jesus.
I could have thrown that first. But then I actually got removalists in, and they were taking some sort of white goods out, and they dropped one of the white goods and chipped a tile in the kitchen. I was like, guys, come on. Like,
simple.
There's two of you, please. Like, put it on the wheel, put it on the trundle.
It's got to be one of the toughest jobs in the world, though, being a removalist.
Would not be one for quids.
No.
Well, Gus, you'd love this. So last week when you were away having a little holiday time, I went to help Tara and Matisse out with some stuff, because I've moved to Sydney.
Yeah.
So Tara said, can you come down and help us move some stuff? I said, yeah, well, we got some friends around there. Just ask them. She goes, no, I want you to help me. Sweet. So I go down there.
You're selfless the way you put yourself out.
No,
for your wife and child.
Yeah. So anyway, so as I'm helping her lift the couch and that, because we want to take Tisa's couch to a storage shed. Anyway, She didn't do her part properly, and I twisted my knee, so now I've got a bung knee.
What do you mean she didn't do her part properly? Well, she was holding the other end.
Yeah. Is that why you're on the anti-inflams?
Yeah, that. But so, and then also, so I said, the removalist come in a couple of days. This is why we pay removalists. She goes, yeah, but I want to get this stuff sorted. So when the removalist came, I was down there again, and I said, thanks, guys. You guys do a good job. Because, mate, they get paid good money, but let me tell you, mate, it's a hard job. Leave it to professionals,
mate,
I say.
You got the Voltaren on like bloody Tic Tacs at the moment. You're flogging that down your guts.
I know.
Especially when you're moving Gussie's grand piano or something like that as well.
Please, and make sure you got to tune it right as well. Give us a call on 1-333-53.
Yeah, we're talking removalist horror stories. We've got Colleen on the line. How are you, Colleen?
Yeah, well, thanks, Stu. Just like a bit more AFL input if I can.
terrific.
My 85-year-old mum, I'd arranged an online removalist to bring her from Victoria to New South Wales. Yeah. I had heard from him. I got on to him. He was supposed to come a particular day, and I finally got on to him, and he said, can't make it that day. I said, she's moving out the next day. Oh. Anyway, he finally arrived. No lift on his truck. My 70-year-old cousin had to help manually lift the furniture into the truck. He then rings me to say, I can't take it all because his truck's half full with mangoes.
Oh. It's like Dell with double invoices. He's got.
Yeah. Wow. So we got some of the furniture, put that in storage. My mum finally moved up. She hasn't got all of her stuff. We didn't have to hire a trailer to go from the mid-north coast down to, I think, Young. My partner goes down there, brings back some stuff, and then I said, what's his chair? And he goes, oh, he said that was your mum's. And I said, nah, that doesn't even belong to her.
Oh,
so we got
God.
Someone else's chair.
Oh,
it was a nightmare.
Debacle.
Great story. Hope your mum's okay.
Oh, well, Cole, mate, surely you can't top that. The removalist horror story, Cole. How are you, Cole?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, boys.
Yeah, we're good, brother. What's your story?
Mate, all of them, because I used to have furnace trucks. I used to have two of them. Everyone's a horror story. Oh, this time, anyway, we picked this load of stuff up from the Soul Sealer at Gosford, and we headed to Melbourne. And we got down there and opened up the furnace room. Next thing you know, this bloody cat jumps out. So we've carried a cat down to Melbourne. So anyway, she turned up later on and we're unloading and everything. And we were just throwing the packing back in the truck saying, oh, we'll fold it all up when we get home and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So we folded it all, you know, just shot it in the truck, jumped in and we'll put the shoe in there to get home, you know. And we get home and opens the door the next morning. And here this cat was standing at the back of me.
What?
It looked like it. Yeah, you come back to bloody Central Coast.
Have you still got it?
No. So it was got in the packing again and just lay there, thought it was good. It was nice and hot. And then
great story.
So then
brother.
We ring her up and tell her she drives from Melbourne back to Budgie or Central Coast and comes up from Melbourne again, picks the cat up, then takes it back to Melbourne. So they've done about 5,000 kilometres in a few days.
Bloody hell. Good on you, mate.
Oh, good on you, mate.
Let's go to Harry. G'day, Harry. What's your removalist horror story, mate?
Hey, boys. So I took this job when I was about 16 working for this removalist company. And then on our first day, we were moving this American .com millionaire from Vaucluse out to Bondi, this mansion. And we were in there moving some stuff, and then he had this ball, this baseball signed by the whole of the Yankees team, and he's talking to us about how much he loved the thing. And then we've done the job, dropped everything off, and then one of the boys pulls it out of their pocket.
Oh, no, come on.
No.
And then they continue to tell me that just a week ago, this lady said, oh, I can't be there for the drop-off, just leave the door open. And then they jacked their TV. And then she calls up going, where's the TV? And they were like, oh, sorry, you told us to leave it open. It's out of our care now.
Oh, dodgy brothers. Thanks, Harry. Oh,
let's go, Matty, in the entrance. How are you, Matty?
Good, guys. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. What's your removalist horror story?
Okay, one of my first jobs on the second or third day, we're moving a family from Annandale to Vaucluse. And it was the boss, the truck driver, he was only a young fella too, and me. And typical boss, he just carried a couple of boxes down and then said, I'll meet you at the other end. So we got lumbered with you know, everything must have had a bloody mirror on it. I'll tell you not. Anyway, by the time we got it on the truck, like three or four of the items were shattered. The glass was shattered. So all the way we're driving there going, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Anyway, the young fella, the driver, he came up with the greatest idea. We'll drive it on St. Enfield Drive at Bondi there. He got a good old guardrails. He just turned sharp left and ran straight into him.
Oh.
And then, like, we slid across the guardrail. Then he ran the boss and said, someone just sideswiped us. And said, oh, like a few of the things have broken in it. To this day, I wish I could go to the house and just apologise to him 30 years later.
Well... That is an incredible set of stories.
Unbelievable.
Our listeners are the best.
We've got some dodgy listeners too, to Squalik. Time to talk to this legend all about the tennis.
Our next guest is a former number one tennis player. He won two consecutive US Open titles in 97 and 98. He's one of the few players to win both singles and doubles Grand Slam titles during his career. Please welcome to the Rush Hour, Pat Rafter.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. Great to have you on the show, Pat. How are you, brother?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Mate, really we are very, very well. Great to talk to you. Great to have you on our show. Let's talk about the Australian Open. Can anyone beat the Joker? Not everyone loves him, but you can't say he's not an absolute legend when it comes to playing the game of tennis.
Yeah, I think he summed it up very well. He's going to be very difficult to beat. People are talking up the fact that maybe Tsitsipas, if he gets through this match, has a really good chance against Novak as well. And we still don't know exactly about Novak's hamstring either, so... Let's just wait and see how all it unfolds. But at this stage, I think Djokovic is a man to beat.
Pat, what did you make of Djokovic receiving a water bottle from his coaching team with a note on it mid-game? Do you reckon that sort of sits well with you?
What? I don't know this story. What happened with about the note? Explain.
Oh, there was a note taped to his
from
water
his,
bottle
from his coaching team.
And yeah, it was just sort of passed down. So it was sort of, I don't know, just, I guess it leads back to the communication between a player and his coaching box. How do you see that currently in the game of tennis?
I could be wrong here, but I think this Australian Open, you're allowed coaching.
Yeah, you are. First one.
Yeah, so you can do, you can say whatever you want, I guess. Mm. So you can hand notes around, you can do, I think, yeah. I mean, unless there's something, there wasn't anything laced in that water bottle, was there?
No, I don't think so. No, not at all.
Hey, Pat, how you going, mate? It's Del here, mate. How you going, buddy?
Of course, it's the big Del.
Hey, mate, you know, it was Australia Day yesterday, and, mate, you know, I've been trying so hard to get Australian of the Year. You were Australian of the Year in 2002.
Mate, you're a million to one. What are you talking about? Put yourself up next to Pat Rafter.
I know, but Pat, like, what can I do to get Australian of the Year? And, you know, that must have been, you know, a wonderful prize for you.
Oh, it was, Del. Wendell, you know what I love about you, mate, is that, and this is why you should be Australian of the Year, is that you own it. You know, whatever goes on in your life, you just sit there and you go, it is what it is, and yeah, I messed up here or whatever I did here. And not enough people in this world do what you do, Del, so I'm nominating you for the 2024 Australian of the Year. If you don't get it, I'll be very upset.
Well, you know what? I tell you how passionate Pat is about Queensland. Obviously, when I went to the Waratahs, wasn't my best year, obviously. he says to me when I saw him, he says, mate, you need to give back your Broncos jersey, your Queensland jerseys, ooh, mate. Yeah, that's how.
He didn't like it.
No, he didn't like it, mate. Like, yeah, it's funny.
Unacceptable.
Hey, Paddy, I spent a lot of time in my life with John Newcombe. He's like a second father to me. We lived next door to each other for many, many years. He talks about you in such glowing terms. You've been literally to the well and back with him many, many times as an athlete at Davis Cup, of course. Having sort of people like him in your corner, what's that like?
Yeah, I had a great chat to Newcombe just yesterday, actually down here in Melbourne. And he's like a father figure. He's a really good man, Nuke. He can sometimes be misunderstood, but deep down he's a ripper. And we spoke about some of those occasions when I was playing Davis Cup and he was on the sideline, and you know, when I switched off and I was in a grumpy mood, and how Nuke dealt with me in that situation. But he having Nuke, and then we had Roche as well, who was a really big part of my life as well and my career. Without those two guys, there's no way I achieve what I achieve.
But looking at just the women's final on Saturday, who do you think will take out that?
Oh, yeah, it's a funny one. I watched both those matches yesterday and I thought they were pretty competitive. They'll match up pretty competitively, I mean, when they play each other. Sabalenka probably has a few more, you know, strings in a bow that she can probably come out with. But she's also had a bit of problems with nerves. So it'll really be interesting to see how she deals with the pressure and expectations of playing a final, because she has been regarded as the next person or last 5 years who should have won a Grand Slam. She hasn't. The other girl is going to be freer. She's won Wimbledon. She's probably pretty confident in herself. She seems pretty cool. If I had to say anyone, I'd maybe lean slightly towards Sabalenka, but it's going to be a tough one. It'd be whoever performs on the day, I reckon.
Hey, Paddy, mate, you love your Broncos. We're out for the Broncos, mate. It's been a while since we've won a premiership. So, but in Kevy, we trust.
Are you
now
a Bronco? You were a Dragon a minute ago. Who are you? Who do you support now?
I'm a three-time premiership player of the Broncos.
Two and a half, because Super League's not a full one.
Well, mate, when Paddy won the US Open back-to-back, he actually came and trained with us. So he was training with us. How good was that for the boys?
Yeah, awesome.
How do you see our season going, Paddy?
Well, I was actually online this morning just checking out the roster. I was just trying to get up to date. It's funny you actually said that, Del. But I don't know. I mean, are Penrith going to be still as strong as they ever were?
Yeah.
I mean, they've been dominant like you boys were in the early 2000s.
Roosters, yeah.
And then you have, and also Tapau. I mean, will he add much to it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he will. I think he's at a stage now where he needs to evolve and change his game and be a leader of that young pack.
Mm. Well, mate... you know, obviously keeping your men on the field is probably one of the hardest things. And you can see as soon as you get a couple of injuries, any team, you know, you're all of a sudden behind the eight ball. So I guess, you know, can you stay fit and healthy? It's probably a big part of any roster of any team.
Mate,
I guess.
Enjoy yourself down there in Melbourne. You deserve every single, little
accolade
corporate drink or
everything.
Accolade you're getting on. And have a give our love to Nuke, brother. He was on the show a little bit earlier this week talking about the start of the second week of the Grand Slam. Thanks for joining us.
Good on you guys. Good
to see you. There you go. Paddy Rafter there. What an absolute legend.
Beautiful.
Time now for Jude Tackle.
Yeah, catch you later, Johnny. What are you all doing here?
Sit down, mate. It's time for a good old-fashioned rush hour intervention.
Oh, mate, we had to pull the trigger because Del and I had something come across the desk earlier on.
This is Jude Tackles.
No, we're going to push that to the second hour. We have to just take a stand here because
what's happened?
Let's just say we know that you got back on Monday the 23rd that evening on an Etihad flight.
Correct.
And we've had an email from an anonymous listener.
Anonymous.
Who was on board that flight.
Oh, no.
Now, the flight was EY454, wasn't it, Del?
Correct.
From Abu Dhabi to Sydney.
Mm.
Now, this listener has experienced some offensive behaviour.
What?
Now, of course, there's a certain self-entitlement about being up the front end of the plane like you have. There's certain privileges.
You're used to it, yes.
But this passenger has witnessed and has alerted us that you got up and walked to the bathroom practically in your undies. That's all. Can you confirm?
Is that true?
Or deny?
Well, I didn't have any shoes on. I didn't have any socks on.
Oh.
I didn't have any shorts, tracky or jeans on.
So no pants whatsoever.
I had my step one undies and a T-shirt.
Where were your rotten Crocs?
What time of the flight?
Business class, you clown.
What time of the flight? You can't just walk along the aisle in your undies.
In my
defense,
thank you. I woke up and needed a wee and looked around the cabin and it was completely dark and we were in a sleeping pattern on our way into Sydney. Mm. So I thought, should I wrap around the little doona thing they give us in the sleeper, or should I just stroll up nude? Oh, not nude, but you know what I mean.
Oh,
so I looked up and I saw that.
Hang on. It's not. It's dark around where people are sleeping in their seats.
But there's
up near the bathrooms or restrooms.
In that particular plane, you can look up and see if there's someone in the restroom
or not,
unoccupied. Mm. So I thought, everyone's asleep. I'm going to nip up there, done and dusted. The thing is, when I got to the bathroom, the bloke was in there, but he hadn't locked it.
He
looked at me and I looked at him and I said, oh, mate. And he goes, oh, sorry, I should have locked it. He then goes back in, locks it. So then I wait and then he comes out. By the time then he looks at me and I'm like, oh, I probably should have
put
jeans
some pants
back
on.
And then I came back out and there was someone else there as well.
Deplorable activity.
Do you understand that you're representing us, our show, like when you're out and about? That's like Gus Wall and Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor.
24-7.
24-7.
Rush hour, mate. You're letting us down.
It's like being an All Black, is it, all of a sudden, being amongst this motley crew? Yeah, okay, I put my hand up. I should have worn pants.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Second clip in a week too.
Yeah,
and I want to say sorry. I'm gonna go put myself in the naughty corner. Let's talk about this. Sydney needs a rat czar, someone who comes in and kicks ass. In New York, the mayor has offered someone, a bloodthirsty new rat catcher, to be paid $242,000 a year American to hunt down rats. Oh. And apparently we have a rat problem here, not only in the city where most big cities have, but in the suburbs as well. Coogee Beach, they have over 500 rats killed in one complex alone. Wow. And when we're talking about rats, we're talking big puppies.
Yes.
Mate, like, big, nasty rats.
Like, is that the sort of ones where you beep your horn, they come out and help you bring the bring the shopping in? Is that right? Is that how big they are?
Yeah, they are bloody massive. Yeah. They're bloodthirsty as well, apparently. They're having a crack at the moment all around. Could you got rats at your place in Lane Covey?
No, now and then we'll see a bit, like, because we've got the chickens as well. So now and then they'll
Have you now got chickens again?
We've got chickens again.
Because if people don't know, you had chickens. They were taken down by the fox. Yeah. There was no chickens. Now you've reapplied.
Let's just say that fox was pretty bloodthirsty and we've had to regenerate and get a few more chickens.
He had some chicken nuggets, didn't he?
Oh, hang on.
Yeah. I know, where I live at Miller's Point, we don't have rats at Miller's Point.
Oh, mate.
would you be the rat czar or not?
No.
Do you like rats?
Yeah. I hate rats. No.
Some people have them as pets, though, don't they?
I think you have been a little rat yourself at times.
The only rat I like is Splinter from Ninja Turtles.
A boy remains in a critical but stable condition after he was struck by lightning on a beach south of Wollongong yesterday. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers go to him and his family and friends. But I thought this would be a good time to talk to a friend of mine who, about 18 months ago, was struck by lightning, and surviving a lightning strike is something that I've never really spoken to anyone about before, because I've never known anyone that gets struck by it. But I've got him on the line, boys. His name's Clint Newcombe. He's a great friend of mine, and he's here to tell us about his experience. G'day, Nuke.
When it hit me, I was very lucky because I wasn't hit directly by the lightning. It hit a fence, and I was holding the gate, and I'd actually been... I'd actually seen a couple of shows beforehand that said that when you got hit by lightning, everything turned grey. And so when everything turned grey, I tried to get my hand away, thought I was quicker than lightning wasn't, and woke up sort of 3 metres away from where I was standing, looking and facing the other way on the ground. And for me, because I was so ready and right at waiting for it, because I actually thought I was going to get hit. The whole thing was real slow, and it felt like 2 or 3 seconds to me for it to go up my arm, into my chest, down my back, and out the front of my leg. And then from that sort of moment on, for definitely the next year and a half, I really struggled with doing anything mentally, like with the head. I couldn't do maths. My kids banned me from helping them from maths homework because I couldn't. I'm getting 6 and 7 out of 10s for my son's year four math homework. Very disappointing. And then, body-wise, for about 3 months afterwards, I felt like when you get sunburnt and the next day after that, you sort of feel that little stretchy pain. It's not hurting, but it's real. You can feel that you got sunburnt yesterday. Well, that was my whole right side on the inside of my skin. So all my muscles felt like they were basically being sunburned for a fair while. But the big thing for me was, I think, it messes you up pretty mentally with your memory and a fair bit of trying to sequence things. And, you know, I haven't forgotten anything. I just have to go and find it. So if I have a conversation with 20 people now, it's quite hard for me to keep the, you know, what's going on and keep up with the conversation.
Clint, we know that getting struck by lightning is not common, but it's something we should be aware of, right?
6 times on the way out to before I got hit, I said to myself, mate, just go inside. You're going to get hit by lightning. Mate, this is when you get hit by lightning. And each time I just called myself a pussy and went, shut up, just hurry up and go do it. And the last one, when I actually got hit, I dropped the fence out of the gate out of my hand, and I had 2 inches to close it. And I said, mate, just leave it. Just walk away. This is when you're going to get hit by lightning. And I went, shut up. And as soon as I touched it, bang, I got hit. Or the gate got hit.
Wow. Hey, Clint, tell the boys about when Sasha asked you to go out and get some simple groceries and what you had to do.
I would be looking at her talking on the phone. You know, I'd be looking at an apple and I'd say, you know, how many bananas do we need? And I know that I was saying I wanted an apple, but the only thing that was coming to me was banana. And I knew it was wrong. And the other actually funny thing that happened, which is about the only funny thing that came out of it, was about half an hour after I got hit, I was sitting down and I looked at my watch, and I got a watch, the Rolex, but it's been broken. It had been broken for about 6 months. And when I looked down at it, not only was it working, but it had gone forward 4 hours.
Wow.
So the whole watch just spun around 4 hours while I was lying there on the ground.
What's recovery now like for you? It's obviously a number of years on. What is it like now?
I still know the stuff that I didn't have before. And, you know, without going into it too deeply, what I think happened is my life's been about collecting stories, you know, things, idiot things I've done and good things and bad and all of that stuff is, you know, it used to be right on hand and it makes you who you are, you know, something happens and all of those things come back to you and you think about them. Well, now for me, they're not there. I have to go and get them. And that's probably the most disappointing thing for me because my life was a bunch of stories.
Thanks a lot, Nuke. Incredible story, mate. And so glad that you're still with us. You're a bloody champion.
Well, boys, normally I just take this chance to take the piss out of something, you know, have a look at something in the news and rip in. But this is a bit more pressing, and it's what to make of Australia Day. I mean, yesterday for me was super strange. You know, how do we actually celebrate this together? Yes. You know, you're seeing groups protest on the streets. You're seeing some people feel shamed to fly a flag. Do I go out and organise a barbecue? Do I go to the beach and have some fun with friends? It's a national day. It should be for that. But this has become an incredibly divisive day, and we need to change it ASAP. We can't let this simmer on. We can't let another year where it just goes on and you just feel ashamed to celebrate what we all enjoy about this country. It's such an incredible country we've got. We're so lucky to be here, and we just need to bring everyone together. We're overthinking, as I mentioned, much like the Aboriginal flag on the Harbour Bridge, which was supposedly going to cost $25 million to fly a flag, which we just want to have up there anyway.
Mm.
Suddenly someone realised that we could take the New South Wales flag down, put the Aboriginal flag up there next to the Australian flag, and it looks incredible on our landmark.
Yeah, it does.
Finally, we've come to our senses. We've saved the cash and we've got it done. To the politicians out there who we elect to represent us, they've got to change the date right now. Like, just find a date that we can all move and we can move forward together.
Yeah.
Some were ashamed, as I mentioned, to go have a barbecue. I mean, the girls playing cricket on Australia Day, they were being asked why they represent. You should be able to go out and watch a game of cricket, do something on Australia Day that represents it all. The enormous crowds attending protests in support of Indigenous citizens. We saw on strong online stance from all our football clubs and sporting clubs supporting our First Nations people. The decision of many employers to say, take another day off if you want. You can come into work. It's a national day.
Mm.
Finally, the tables are turned. It should be like turning the snag on the Barbie at home. Let's make this a national day and an occasion we can celebrate. So change the date. And we've also got a referendum coming up later on this year around enshrining a voice to Parliament. Let's vote yes. Let's get that in. Let's make a change and move forward. That's me out today.
Nice, Jude. Nicely done.
Yeah, I feel strongly about it too. Drew hit the nail right on the head there.
Yeah, beautiful. Well done, big fella. Time to talk women's sport. Time to talk to this legend.
Our next guest debuted for Sydney Thunder at age 16. She's the youngest player to score a WBBL half century in her second match. She was called into her first Australia T20I squad for the 2022 Tour of India. Please welcome to the Rush Hour, Phoebe Litchfield.
Yeah, welcome to the show. How are you?
Pretty well, thanks. How are you?
Mate, very, very well. Last time we spoke, we were umpiring a match, a fun game at a school in Orange, and you were playing for the Thunder. Now you're a fully fledged member of the Australian team. You must be so happy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sort of reflecting on it now, sitting back in the college room, and yeah, it's a pretty cool feeling.
Phoebe, it must have been pretty special having Meg Laning return to the Australian cricket team. She had a little bit of a hiatus and stepped away from the game, but then to come back in and have such an impact straight away.
Yeah, she was awesome. I think that was the first time I've ever met her, and She just slid in, perfectly and was amongst the runs straight away. So, yeah, it looks like she hadn't missed a day.
Hey, Phoebe, it's Wendell Saylor here. You came in at a young age. I remember watching you. I think you were 15 or 16, and you did it with these. Does the mental health side of it, or, you know, being such a young person, the burnout, does that worry you at any stage?
Yeah, a little. I, when I don't score runs for a while, I go, oh, my God, I hate this game. But, it's all right. But I think it's more just the earmark that, you know, you're the next big thing and, you know, do I actually live up to that? So it's probably been the battle with that. But I've just been trying to not listen to it, just train and try to keep scoring runs, I guess.
Now, you toured India with the Australian T20 squad. What was it like playing in front of the Indian fans? Because they are just obsessed with the game of cricket.
Oh, it was crazy. You just couldn't hear yourself think, really. They would just scream at you. You'd give them a wave and they'd just be like, oh, my God. So, yeah, it was pretty unreal and definitely an amazing place to tour for my first tour.
Hey, Phoebe, pretty good time to be an outstanding cricketer at the moment, especially in the women's game with the franchises for the IPL, ladies IPL going for record amounts, more than what the men got in their first year.
Wow.
A real opportunity for you to play the game you love but actually be able to make a living out of it as well.
Yeah, it's so exciting, and I think it's a reward for all the hard work that players have done before me. And, to see those numbers, we're all just – very excited for the auction to come around.
Hey, Phoebs, I saw the story on Ash Gardner. I'm a big fan of hers, but I loved how you all got around her as well, you know, with the match yesterday. But yeah, you're standing for what you believe in, and it's a strong stance.
Yeah, it's so good. And I think Ash's response on that was perfect, and I think our whole group sort of believed in it. We can't control any of the fixtures that we get given, but it's really nice to sort of present our view on it. And, yeah, we back Ash 100%.
When you played your first game for the Sydney Thunder at 16, I mean, what's the reception like when you step back into school on a Monday morning after that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty unreal. I sort of, forget about those moments but get reminded every so often. And, it was so funny. I just remember them going, oh, my God. Like, they had no idea about cricket.
Yeah.
But, they see me on TV and you go, oh, my God, you actually play cricket. Yeah, so.
Phoebe, who were your idols that you looked up to, you know, in through sport or out of sport? Who were some of the people that you thought, you know, they're the people that I want to set my standards on?
I think I actually looked up to Meg Lanning and Elise Perry growing up as cricketers. And I think that's such a cool thing that, you know, we could look up to female cricketers because all of that generation looked up to men. So, they were sort of my idols in the way they present themselves and their values and their leadership, I think. Really, I looked up to that.
Phoebs, you're from in and around the Orange area and you love your local community. Your family are well-respected and loved from there. What's it going to be like to play a few of the National Cricket League matches in Orange in February? You must be excited to get back home.
Yeah, I'm really keen for that. I'm excited to take the girls out to the farm and play in front of the Orange crowd. I've got a mate back at school. She was like a little cricketer and she was asking the principal if they can get a pupil free day to go watch the cricket. So
I think that's a great idea.
We should go out there too. Yeah. We should go out there and
mate, Orange is one of the great spots.
You go to a few vineyards and that. Oh, and it's very nice.
It's not about going drinking. It's about watching the cricket and doing our show,
support
brother.
Support local product, right.
The wine is, you know, a staple.
Hey, Phoebe, thanks for joining us on the show. Congratulations on everything you've done so far. No doubt you'll keep your feet on the ground. Great opportunity for you, and you know you've got some supporters here at Triple M.
Thanks, Gus. Thanks, everyone.
No worries. Phoebe Litchfield there, fantastic. What a role model. Every single one of those players, they're the best in the world and also good people.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got a beautiful culture there in the Australian cricket team.
The Rush Hour with Gus, Jude and Wendell. Weekdays from 4 on Triple M.